You are Locked On Vikings, your daily Minnesota Vikings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome, welcome, welcome in, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Locked On Vikings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. And before I get into the show, I just want to shout out Peacock and Williamson. It is another show here on the Locked On Podcast Network by NFL analyst Brian Peacock and a former NFL scout, Matt Williamson. They host Peacock and Williamson every Monday through Friday. Brian and Matt give you the national perspective all around the NFL, covering all the latest news and insight on every game, team, and move around the NFL. Get your picks, previews, and much more every weekday with the Peacock and Williamson podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can find it wherever you find your favorite podcasts. Today is Twitter Tuesday. I asked you for your questions, and you guys gave me a whole bunch, so I'm excited to get into all of these, especially, I know you all must have a bunch of questions, post-draft questions, pent up since we didn't do this last week. The first one comes from Relib Nodnarb, who asks, while the defense was ravaged by injury, the offense was healthier than expected, so it seems to be somewhat of a wash. Despite all of the upgrades this offseason, the team seems to again need unreasonably good injury luck to make noise in the playoffs. Agree? So I don't think that's quite correct in terms of how injured they were in 2021. If you look at man games lost, which takes approximate value, the PFR metric that is not perfect, but it's a decent enough estimate of like general value and like games started and stuff to basically try to quantify exactly who lost what by injury, the Vikings were top five on the whole. Defense was absolutely decimated, and the offense wasn't immaculately healthy. It was not as healthy as the defense was injured. There were a bunch of offensive line injuries that might not feel like big losses, but they had to cycle through like four guards, and none of those guys, if I remember, were like genuinely benched. They were all hurt, and then the guy who came in like outplayed, you know, Drew Samir or whatever, and then that's how they lost the job. But it wasn't like a true benching. Sometimes it was COVID and stuff like that as well. I think average injury luck gets them into the playoffs. And I think that's before even considering like offseason additions like Tomlinson and Peterson, because again, they were a game out of the playoffs. Ultimately, if they beat the Bears in week 15, they get into the playoffs. So I don't know. I don't think that they need unreasonably good injury luck. I think they need average injury luck to get into the playoffs if everything else stayed the same as it was last year, which would like assume total disaster for Tomlinson and Michael Pierce or something equivalent. Troy Johnson DM'd this question. Would you kindly explain options with Kirk's contract now that we have Mond? My understanding is we have to cover the $20 million in bonuses over the next 2 years, but after 2021 and we want to trade him, then we just have to negotiate with the trading partner what amount of the $35 or $45 million we will cover and what they will. The contract works as such. So there's a bunch of guaranteed money, and if you trade Kirk Cousins, the guaranteed money goes over to that team. If you traded him tomorrow, he would cost $21 million this year for the team that traded him, which is dirt cheap for a quarterback, and $35 next year, which ain't that bad either. Now, that's $10 million in each year unaccounted for, and that's the bonus that is completely unmovable. The Vikings have to pay that bonus eventually. They've already paid it in like real money to Kirk Cousins, so it's like a debt they have against the salary cap that the Vikings and the Vikings alone have to pay. Now, if you trade him tomorrow, you pay all $20 million of that right now. So the Vikings would actually come out net saving $11 million against their cap. And then, of course, everything's gone from 2022. If you traded him anytime after this coming June 1st, then the $10 million bonus in each year in 21 and 22 would stay in their respective years, 21 and 22. If you traded him after the 2021 season, and then everything is paid, you'd just have a $10 million dead cap hit, and you'd save the other $35 million of it. So you save $35 million total, and the other team takes on the $35 million. I would imagine if you offered to take some of the salary and, you know, kind of convert some of his salary into signing bonus, which you could do. Let's say you trade him next year, just to keep things simple. You trade him next year, so the Vikings would take $10 million of it, and the trading team would take $35 million of it. And then let's say, you know, you want them to give you a better draft pick, and in exchange for that, you say, we'll take on a little bit more of the contract money. We'll convert $10 million more of Kirk Cousins' contract to signing bonus, so we keep it. We'll take 20, you take 25, and you give us a better draft pick or something. You could totally do that, and it's all a kind of fluid thing. As the money goes up, the draft pick goes down, and etc. But really, any way you slice it, Kirk Cousins is a totally tradable asset the second Kellen Mond is ready. Now, go listen to yesterday's episode. I think that's going to be a while. But if, you know, if he's ready way faster than I think, and you want to trade him before the trade deadline, you know, in week seven to someone whose quarterback just got hurt, cap-wise, super easy and works out great for both sides. Walker says, do you think it's still likely Kirk gets extended after this season? I know that's kind of the train we were all on before the Mond picked that signal a recent change in philosophy from the front office. So before the Mond pick, I basically had it chalked up to an inevitability. I didn't think that they would pay $45 million against the cap, and I was basically either you extend him or you trade him. Those are the only two options. Still kind of think those are the only two options. I don't think that they will take a $45 million cap hit if Kellen Mond is ready. And I think this hinges squarely on Kellen Mond. I do not think this has anything to do with how well Kirk Cousins plays. If Kellen Mond is ready, they trade him. If Kellen Mond is not ready, then I think they extend him to a contract, and I'm going to be really interested to look in that contract. So I still think he gets extended, but it does change the dynamic for sure, because I think they extend him to a contract that is tradable. It wasn't tradable in, say, you know, 2020, right? Where if you tried to trade him, you would have actually had to take more dead cap than the contract itself was worth, and it would be like this crazy, unreasonable thing. But I think they can structure it in a way that is tradable with like not much signing bonus and a lot of guaranteed salary or something like that. So we'll see how Kellen Mond comes along, but I do think that we're a long way away from Kellen Mond influencing what the Vikings do with Kirk Cousins. I think that probably muddies the decision next offseason a little bit, but I still think ultimately they're going to land on an extension, but it might influence the structure of that extension. Norse asks, similar to how the D-line can sub in specialists, why won't an NFL team sub in run-blocking specialists? Bring in a guy or two who dominate in run-blocking on first down and keep defense on their toes by still running play action with those subs in. So that's super interesting. I've thought about that a lot. I think the main reason is chemistry is just really important on offensive line and not so much on defensive line, where on defensive line, it's a lot more of, you know, you just go beat your guy, go get to the quarterback, or, you know, go be in your gap, and being kind of assignment sound takes a little bit less communication on the defensive line. On the offensive line, everybody has to be in like perfect tap dancing sync. And that is harder to do when guys are kind of rotating in and out. That said, that doesn't sound like that insurmountable of a problem, like in the abstract. So I wonder if somebody tries this at the high school level someday. And that's how all the new ideas happen, is somebody tries it at high school, and then some college coach scouting recruits steals the idea, and then some NFL coach scouting draft picks steals the idea up to the NFL. So maybe somebody does this in the high school ranks. I think it would be kind of neat, and I think that the chemistry concern would ultimately be outweighed by how neat that could be. But the other thing is, I don't know, just get offensive linemen that are good at all of it and not a guy that like sucks at one thing or another. That's possible. We just haven't seen it in Minnesota for a long time, so maybe we forgot that it was possible. But then again, anything is possible, especially in the wide, wide world of gambling. If you want to get your gamble on, head on over to betonline.ag. They've got all of the news, scores, and odds that you need. The Triple Crown is going on right now. The NBA playoffs are coming up. You can still place all your bets on where teams are going to finish and stuff. You can bet on MLB and NHL and all that stuff. I know the Wild are going crazy with their new rookie. There's Anthony Edwards, you know, his rookie of the year odds. You can bet on that. Everything at betonline.ag. You just go over on your laptop, your mobile device. It's free to sign up and make an account. When you actually deposit money to gamble with, make sure you enter promo code LOCKEDON. You get a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit when you first sign up. That's promo code LOCKEDON, LOCKEDON, for a 50% welcome bonus at betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. Continuing on with this Twitter Tuesday mailbag episode, the next one comes from Chris, who says, Kirk Cousins with the current projected O-line or Aaron Rodgers, but you must start Dakota Dozier every game. Look, the current O-line is not, like, infallible. I mean, Aaron Rodgers is way better than Kirk Cousins. I mean, come on. So I think I'm taking Aaron Rodgers for sure. I'll put up with Dakota Dozier. Easy. Seth Tupal, who you should all go subscribe to his show, Locked On Wild. If you're a Wild fan, go check it out. Says, how long into the season before Zimmer Broncos 2017 and declines to name a starting quarterback every week. Yeah, people were really like upset about that. He was like, why would I tell anybody the starting quarterback? The teams are preparing for us. And people were like really annoyed that he like wouldn't name Case Keenum the like starter to the media. I don't know. I never got why people were so upset about that. I don't think we get even close to that point this season. If you listen to yesterday's episode on Kellen Mond, I just don't think Kellen Mond will be ready nearly in time. Maybe we start talking about it in the 2022 season. So maybe like halfway through there or something like that, like at best. Mond has a lot of work to do. I don't think we should think of him as a potential replacement for Kirk Cousins game to game quite yet. I think we're a pretty far cry from that right now. Nate says, who will be a more impactful free agent addition, Dede Westbrook or Ryan Kerrigan? A, if they get both of these guys, I'm doing backflips, right? But I imagine they could probably only get one or the other. I would rather get Ryan Kerrigan. The pass rush is just in a really, really rough spot right now. But it's set up really well to like have one other person pay it off. Because right now, the only real true pass rusher they have is Danielle Hunter. They've got like Stephen Weatherly and DJ Wonnum. Those guys aren't good enough. They've got Dalvin Tomlinson and Michael Pierce. Those guys don't rush the passer as like their primary function. They can rush the passer fine. I think Dalvin Tomlinson's probably better as a pass rusher than he gets credit for, but that's like not the point of them. But the point of them is to, you know, suck up double teams and to warp protections. And so they're very, very good at warping protections and setting up one-on-ones for guys that can't win those one-on-ones, but get somebody like Kerrigan who can win those one-on-ones. And I think a lot of the other work can kind of be amplified. So I go with Ryan Kerrigan. Chad the Lesser asks a great one. How do you grade a draft or GM's draft history? I read some articles recently that are dinging GMs for draft picks that are no longer on the team. That seems reductive to me. There are plenty of reasons for someone to no longer be on the team that don't make the selection a bad one when it was made, including, you know, it was an amazing selection and we couldn't afford the mega contract. So, yes, I think whether or not they are still on the team, you need to apply context, right? And I think if you are going to, you know, evaluate all GMs over the last 5 years of the whole NFL, and you're just going to be like, okay, with some false negatives, with some things where, you know, you just traded the guy after 2 years for a first round pick, you know, Minka Fitzpatrick was not a bad draft pick. So if you're setting up a heuristic and then applying it to the whole league, you're going to like have some accidents where you accidentally look at Minka Fitzpatrick and like chalk him up as a bad draft pick, which is wrong. So you have to look at that context, which is why those sorts of exercises don't really move the needle for me, because there isn't really like, you could go with like career AV as a really popular one, approximate value. And that's going to like overrate offensive linemen all the time. You know, Pat Elflein is seen as a slam dunk draft pick by AV. Now, for a third round pick that started poorly for 4 years, that's actually pretty good for a third round pick. Starting at all is good, whether or not they played well. But it probably is like overrating him, or it's overrating like Garrett Bradbury, who's going to be the starter for his whole rookie contract. Most models are going to see that as a hit, but was he good? You could do stuff with like wins above replacement with PFF grades. That I think I have a kind of other host of issues with in terms of a heuristic. Generally, here's my barometer for a draft pick, depending on the round, were they successful, right? A round one pick, I think by day one of their second year, they've got to be a starter. If you're a round one pick and you're not starting by day one of your second year, you didn't work out. If by round two, you have to be a starter at some point in that second year. So you can have a redshirt year and still be successful, right? Patrick Mahomes had a redshirt year, but he was starting by day one. In round three, I think you need to be a contributor of some sort by year two, not necessarily a starter, but you can be, you know, wide receiver three, tight end two, something like that. By round four, I need you to be a contributor anytime over your rookie deal, even if it takes you 3 years to develop. You know, these fourth rounders can be super, super raw guys that take forever. At some point over the rookie deal, if you're a real contributor from scrimmage, if you're in a rotational role, I think you worked out. By round five, I think you only really ever need to be depth, right? Round five, at that point, you're not really going to be expected to be a starter. But I think you need to be depth for 3 years. You need to make the team for 3 years. And then, you know, by your fourth year, if you're not making the team anymore, you've probably already kind of gotten your value. And then round six, I need you to make the team for 2 years. Round seven, I need you to make the team at least 1 year. If you are a round seven pick, you never make the team. You didn't work out. But I think, I don't know. I don't see a lot of value in trying to quantify every draft pick, because every draft pick and every player is so different that, you know, the guy that sits on the bench for 2 years and then plays for one might end up having a better career on the whole than the guy that played for all 3 years but had a lower ceiling. And so those metrics are always going to give you a lot of false positives and a lot of false negatives. And it's like, by the time you've applied the proper margin of error, they're not telling you anything anymore. I do, however, think it's important to kind of distinguish, or like, what question are you asking about GMs, right? Because are you asking how good are they at evaluation? I think you can answer that question a little bit more easily, where you go, okay, did your third round picks do what third round picks should do? But in a draft like 2020, the Vikings will probably end up missing on like 7, 8, 9, even 10 of those 15 picks. And that's okay, because if you come out of a draft with 5 contributing players, that's a really good draft. And so the idea of getting a lot of picks and then missing on a bunch of them, it's like, it's there is something to be said for like not adjusting to that volume, because that volume is part of the strategy. And adjusting for it, it's almost like adjusting for volume on a fantasy receiver, right? I don't care if that receiver gets this many yards per catch. How many yards does he get in total? I want the most fantasy points. Now, I still got a bunch of questions to get to, but first let's talk a little bit about your car. I want to make sure you are all staying very safe about your car. And if you need new car parts, new maintenance parts, or just stuff that you need to replenish all the time, like motor oil, windshield wiper fluid, that kind of stuff, anything you'd get at like a brick and mortar auto store, head on over to rockauto.com instead, because they will not upsell you as a retail customer versus wholesale buyers. The brick and mortar joints actually do that. They've got a huge catalog. Just enter your make, your year, and your model, and they'll sort out all of the possible options for you and make sure you're getting something that's compatible with your car, and of course lets you save a buck while you're doing it. That's at rockauto.com. And in the how you heard about us section, make sure that you let them know that Locked On sent you, because if you don't, my bunnies will never respect me again. Rock Auto, amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. All right, continuing on with this Twitter Tuesday mailbag episode, next up comes a question from Chase Palm, who asks, two Kellen Mond Vikings quarterback comps I've heard, Dante Culpepper and Christian Ponder. What's the justification for each? And if forced to choose, which would you say is more accurate? I hate it when people compare Vikings quarterbacks to Christian Ponder, because what they mean is bad Vikings quarterback. And that's not a comp. You're just saying he's bad. Just say he's bad if you think he's bad. So I don't see a similarity with Christian Ponder like at all, really, except that both of them can run. But like, Ponder wouldn't keep his eyes downfield. Kellen Mond doesn't like want to run like Ponder did. Ponder wanted to tuck it and make a play with his legs first read, and he would tuck and go. And that was like the big problem with him. Kellen Mond doesn't want to do that at all. Like, he will break the pocket and he'll scramble and he'll use that ability. But I actually think he's really responsible with how he uses that ability. I think it's a really big strength of his, is deciding when and when not to break the pocket. And in fact, I think he stands into messy pockets and delivers throws from messy pockets pretty well. I actually really like how he puts up with imperfect pockets, and when pressure is true, then he'll bail. I don't know. I think he plays that really well, and Ponder doesn't at all. So I guess that's just people saying like bad Vikings quarterback. So I'll go with Dante Culpepper, who has a bigger arm, and, you know, of course he has the runaround scramble ability, and I think the Vikings actually had designed run plays with him. I don't know. I was a kid, so I don't remember. So I guess it's closer to Dante Culpepper. But Dante Culpepper, again, was like a sizey, like Roethlisberger, Cam Newton type that, you know, is supposed to be this big bulky guy. And then, of course, he got injured and stuff. And he had a much better deep ball than Kellen Mond has. So I don't think either of these are particularly good comps at all, except that they are Vikings draft picks. Come on, you got to work a little harder than that. Kyle Slaby says, assuming no free agent additions come in before the season, what is the starting setting of the chaos meter for our 2021 kicking game? For the kicking game, pretty chaotic. They have three competitions as coming into the red, probably, right? Like, that's really chaotic. You have competitions at long snapper, punter, and kicker, and probably at holder as well. You're going to have a lot of competition, which means you can't get your chemistry and your timing dialed in. And that means that we're kind of going to be really worried about it. I think the special teams preseason is going to be a catastrophe. And that's okay, as long as they get it all set, you know, by the time they actually have to play meaningful football. But I think we might see a lot of missed field goals in camp and in the preseason. Doug Naspy says, assuming the starting OL is Darisaw, Cleveland, Bradbury, Davis, O'Neal, do you think there's a unique advantage in pairing bigger guys like Darisaw and Davis with lighter agile guys like O'Neal and Cleveland? And if so, do you think this design is intentional? Also, I feel like this alignment allows for Bradbury to take off like a heat-seeking missile in the second and third level. I definitely agree with the last part. That's really awesome to, you know, have bigger guys like Darrisaw and Davis that don't necessarily have to climb, though they could if you wanted them to. And then you can kind of send the faster guys up to the second level. I like that mix. I don't know if it's... I would actually say it's probably better to have the bigger guys next to each other and the smaller guys next to each other, because then, you know, if you're running to the left, you can run more powerful things. If you're running to the right, you can run more agility-based things. I don't think it makes a gigantic difference, and I think the bigger thing is just get people on the side where they're the most comfortable and they can play the position the best, which I think your configuration does that better than one that kind of pairs the bigger guys with the bigger guys and the smaller guys with the smaller guys. Nano Garces asks, do you think the Vikings playbook could have special plays for specific moments to use what Mond does best? I don't mean to compare them to each other, but something like Hill has at the Saints. So I don't think you can do like a Taysom Hill package for him, because he's not like a wide receiver, right? He's not that athletic. But I do love the idea of like installing some option plays with the second team if you can swing it. But it's really hard. Like, that's not a costless thing to do, because install time is precious, especially in what will probably be a truncated offseason. So if you can find a way to get the install time, I think that's a really, really great idea. But that's a difficult thing to do, and that's kind of why you don't see teams go for it. But I think that'd be really cool, right, to have like option plays that can just come in. You know, if Kirk Cousins tweaks his ankle and Kellen Mond has to come in for a drive, and suddenly you're running read option against a defense that did not prepare for that at all, that would be awesome. It's also something, you know, if Kirk Cousins does get an injury and now you're preparing for the next season, now you're installing option plays in the middle of the week, and you can start to kind of get some momentum that way. Patrick Nisler says, it seems like you've written off all of last year's defensive draft as terrible. Was this a bad draft, or young players in a bad situation last year having to play? I don't know if I've written off all of last year's defensive draft. I'm like mega high on Cameron Dantzler. I think Cameron Dantzler is going to be CB1 over Patrick Peterson. I feel like I'm kind of hot taking the other way on him. But in terms of everybody else, I mean, DJ Wonnum as a fourth round pick, I think he's surpassed what a fourth round pick should be. He shouldn't be a starter, but I wouldn't expect that from a fourth round pick in year two. He's already gotten to that contributor range where I want him. Troy Dye, absolutely a young player that shouldn't have been in yet. He's like Chaz Surratt. He's a player. Chaz Surratt should not see the field from scrimmage this year. Troy Dye shouldn't have seen the field from scrimmage last year, but of course things went pretty haywire there. So I get why it happened, and I don't think that reflects into like a bad draft pick. It was a bad circumstance for sure. Everybody else, you know, once you get to fifth, sixth, seventh round, if you make the team, I'm happy, which a lot of them didn't. But maybe, I don't know, if they make the team, you know, if the seventh round picks, if Kenny Willekes makes the team this year, I mean, he just got hurt, right? If he makes the team this year as a defensive end, then great, then he's a successful seventh round pick. Vikes SoCal asks, what is the difference between edge and five tech? Awesome question. So edge rusher is, the way I talk about it, is an umbrella term for anybody that plays in the alignments between four eyes. So four technique is head up against the tackle. So right up against the left or right tackle, head to head on him. And the I stands for inside shade. So if you line up on the inside shoulder of the tackle and out, I call that an edge rusher. So everything four eye. And then if you're on like between the tackle and if there's a tight end, you call that a five technique. That's what five tech is. Edge is an umbrella term that encompasses four eye, five technique, you know, seven technique would be outside the tight end, nine technique would be way out there. And nine technique is a really useful thing to do. You know, it's a good angle and it really stresses tackles. So edge encompasses all of those different alignments. Five tech is one of them. So five tech is an alignment that edges do. It's an umbrella. George says, a little reckless speculation. What if the Vikings went all out on getting offensive line, at least in theory, to a somewhat decent group in order to entice a certain disgruntled QB in Seattle? Oh, I love it. I know we aren't necessarily in love with the QB because they took someone that is more athletic. Why not pull the trigger on that scenario? I'm not going to look up if the cap is going to work for that. I have no idea if the cap is going to work for that. But it probably, I don't know. I don't think that that's the case. I don't think they went all in enough on O-line for that. Like, they spent a couple draft picks on it, but they kind of had to, right? Like, so I don't think that signals anything. And again, like I've talked about with Kellen Mond, they are not ready to play Kellen Mond yet. Kellen Mond is a lottery ticket that might pay off 2 years from now. Kirk Cousins is in no additional jeopardy because of Mond, at least not yet. Not until Mond shows that he's improved in a lot of areas. UK Dan says, Jalen Hurts came out of last year's draft as a non-first round pick, turned into a starter for this year. I just wondered what your comparison would be for him and Mond as to who you considered more ready to play coming out of the draft. I appreciate there's more at play with Hurts and the Eagles in the situations. I didn't look at the quarterbacks pre-draft that much. And I know a little more about Hurts now because he played, of course, but trying to forget that hindsight. I think I had Jalen. I was pretty high on Jalen Hurts. If I remember, I wanted Jalen Hurts pretty bad. And I thought that the Eagles getting him in round two was kind of a steal. So I think if I remember, Jalen Hurts was a lot more ready to play than I think Kellen Mond is. Now, obviously, I've looked way more into Kellen Mond. So maybe if I looked at all of Jalen Hurts' college tape, I would have found just as many flaws. Who knows? But I think I had Jalen Hurts way above where I had Kellen Mond this year. Skull Steve asks, I can't get excited about the Surratt pick because he sounds like Troy Dye V2. Am I being too negative? I think Troy Dye is actually a pretty interesting comp for him. And yeah, I think if he went on the field, he would play like Troy Dye. But like I said earlier, Troy Dye wasn't supposed to be on the field, and Chaz Surratt is not supposed to be on the field. So if he can get the redshirt year like he's supposed to, he'll have a better chance than Troy Dye. But yeah, they're coming from very similar places. That's not inherently a bad thing. It only is a really bad thing if those guys see the field. Hopefully you stay a little bit healthier this year. Stizo asks, assuming the Vikings stay at the spots they drafted, what three picks would you have changed and why? So I love this one. I will give you Kellen Mond. I won't change the Kellen Mond pick because, you know, taking a stab at a quarterback can only be so wrong. I've said that a lot. I would trade Darisaw for Tevin Jenkins. I was much higher on Tevin Jenkins as a tackle. I will trade Chaz Surratt for Dyami Brown, who was on the board. Give me a weapon instead of a linebacker that can't play. And I would trade Cameron Bynum for Tylan Wallace. Double dip on wide receiver. And then you can also do something later in the draft like Ty Gillespie instead of Janarius Robinson or something, because I do like the idea of getting a project safety anyways to kind of replace, since I got rid of Cameron Bynum. I could not get to all of your questions. I do want to get to one more, which comes from Forrester. He asks, if your bunnies were Vikings players, who would they be? Absolutely Diggs and Thielen, because they are two peas in a pod. So they're like besties. The Zoe, the girl, is temperamental, and she is absolutely a diva, so she's Diggs. And Zeedee, the boy, is very much ready to go with the flow on anything, and like this kind of laid-back guy, totally reads as a Thielen to me. And together, they are an unstoppable and dynamic duo. Thank you all for listening to this Twitter Tuesday episode. We'll be back tomorrow. I want to talk about Chaz Surratt tomorrow. Might even post the interview that I had with Candace Cooper, who did Locked On Tar Heels for a while. Now she's doing Locked On ACC, the whole ACC. So we talked to her a whole bunch. You're going to be hearing from Candace Cooper a lot in future shows. So I will get to all of that tomorrow. In the meantime, you can find me on Twitter at Luke Braun NFL, and the show is on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. And as always, Skol.